Hello, Guitar Smarts listeners. This is an important announcement. Please don't skip ahead. We start this podcast with a special message. Way back in 2021, Guitar Smarts had the pleasure of interviewing the utterly fantastic Matt Long. Matt is a multiple award-winning British blues guitarist and lead singer of the British blues band Catfish and hard rock outfit The Revenant Ones. He joined us for episode number 20 and was a truly gracious guest who spoke about his career, his childhood, guitars, and meeting his hero, Joe Bonamassa. Well, Matt needs your help. Through 2023, Matt has been undergoing treatment for bowel cancer, and his recent prognosis has meant that to extend his life and retain a chance of survival, he needs to seek private treatment outside of the NHS. Matt's family have set up a GoFundMe page that is linked in the Guitar Smarts link tree in the description of this podcast, and we at the Guitar Smarts podcast would like to invite each and every listener to consider donating towards this fund that could well save the life of one of the brightest guitar talents of our generation. Now is the time, folks. Head on over to the link in the description to find the GoFundMe page. Donate what you can. Your donation could save a life. Thank you. Enjoy the podcast.
I want to see your reaction to this.
Okay.
Because I know you like a Gibson.
Holy.
Semi. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a yeah. That's a polite yeah of, yeah, no, thanks, not for me.
Oh my goodness. Greetings, welcome back to the Guitar Smarts podcast. This week we are asking the question, if you had £3,000 to spend on a new guitar, what would you buy? We asked our listeners on the Guitar Geek Hangout what they would like us to talk about on the podcast. We had a plethora of excellent suggestions, many of which we will most certainly do, but this week we're thanking you, Mr. King Fredward Simpson, for your excellent suggestion. Kieran and I have got 3,000 of our finest, well-earned, imaginary English pounds in our pockets, and we've gone out and chosen two guitars each, something available off the shelf and something custom-built. Listen on to find out what we chose and to learn more about that amazing colour choice Kieran made in the intro just now. As always, remember to like and subscribe to this podcast. That way you won't miss the next show. Using the link tree in the description of this show, you can get to our social media pages, especially the Guitar Geek Hangout page on Facebook, where you can get to know many other guitar nerds just like us. Remember, if you've got any comments or requests for the show, you can reach out to us through our social media page. That's about enough from me. Let's get to it. It is good to see you too, man. It's been too long. I was like,
I know.
When was it? It must have been early June. That's crazy. We've been so busy.
Too much time. That is too much time.
No, man. We've got a lot of catching up to do.
We really have.
How are you keeping? You well?
I am very well, buddy. Yeah, I'm really good. Thank you for asking. Yeah,
excellent. Man. What's new, dude? What's been happening since the last time we spoke? Because it's been too long.
It has been too long. So June, right? We went to the jam night together. That was end of May, beginning of June.
Yeah.
And then I've had holidays, which has been lovely. We went to, yeah, I've been all over the place, mate. Wow. I've been to France, been to Turkey, did some work over in Barcelona. Yeah, I was barely in the country in June. It was a hard life.
Yeah, but it sounds difficult.
Yeah, yeah, it was difficult. It was tough, man. Someone had to do it, you know? Yeah. And then lots of gigging as well, yeah.
Brilliant.
June was a bit quiet for gigs with me being out of the country, but May was busy, and now July's been full on. July is absolutely full on. I think I've got a gig every weekend in July.
Wow.
And quite a bit of August.
You're going to have those chops properly, you know.
Oh, you say sorted. That. You say that. I'm doing a depth gig tomorrow. With the infamous and famous DLB.
Infamous and famous.
I mean, that is depth gigs, man. Just wow. Yeah, pushes you outside your comfort zone in a big way. Yeah. And first gig with in-ears, no amp behind me.
Yeah, how do you feel about it? How do you feel? Yeah.
Everything feels very, very, I mean, to be fair, went round and had a little blast through with Damo, bless him, spent a lot of time taking me through, getting me all set up. We sound checked in his living room.
Really?
before we set up for the gig. So yeah, I got everything set up on my iPad, tested out the in-ears, got all my sounds like ready. I've got my own iPad just to control all my mix for my in-ears. This is all new to me, right? This is all new to me. So yeah, it was great. And then, got some more practicing ahead of me before tomorrow night's gig. But yeah, most of the set I'm pretty confident with. There's just a few numbers that I need to get locked in. But yeah. You know, it keeps you sharp, these kind of things. Keeps you sharp. Stops you getting complacent. Stops you getting complacent. Because I have the luxury with the Hot Fuzz of just rocking up, knowing the set list, and just going for it, right? And so it's moments like this that remind me, oh, yeah, you need to keep learning and practicing and pushing yourself because, yeah.
You do. You're absolutely right.
It's all good. It's all good. But you've been busy as well, man. I've been seeing your social media feeds and stuff. You've been out gigging a lot, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. But I've had a good few gigs. This has been the busiest period of the year for me. But I don't have anything else now until September, which is fine, actually, because I kind of, you know, I could do the break off. I don't need many gigs to be, you know, satisfied. But yeah, I had some really good ones. So, you know, and I'm really kind of, I'm honing the tone on the Helix a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Tried a few different approaches actually this year. Not because I was unsatisfied. I just kind of, I like experimenting with it. For different gigs, different sounds, and as different songs come in the set, I need to remind myself I don't have to use this like a normal pedal board. I don't have to have one set of sounds and choose the appropriate closest thing. I can have a, you know, if I need to have a different sound for a different song, it's a completely different rig, I can have that. It just needs to be a different preset. I'm a little bit lazy when it comes to, I'm not very good at taking the time to really kind of create a proper bank of tones and sounds that I can use. I'm trying to do that a little bit more. And it's been really rewarding. The last gig I had, I was really like, I was over the moon with how things sounded. Something else I've really enjoyed the last couple of gigs is the sound guy that's been on has given me like a stereo feed out into the PA. Mm-hmm. So being able to hear everything coming out in stereo from the Helix has been great, because I do have some stereo delays and stereo reverbs and things like that. So it's been sounding great. And they've been really fun gigs. The band that I've been depping with this year, and I say depping with, I think I'm pretty much a first call for them now anyway, but they're just a really great bunch of guys. And the set they do is really cool. It's very soul, very soul and kind of 60s and 70s orientated. Not too much modern stuff.
Up your kind of alley as well with a lot of your
It's playing. Mostly rhythm guitar for me. There's very few songs. Mm-hmm. There's only one or two songs where I ever really get to do any lead stuff. But it's all stuff that, you know, is really enjoyable to play from a rhythm guitarist point of view, like Soul Man, you know, things like that are really good fun to play, you know. So I've been really enjoying playing with them, and they're a good fun bunch of people. So yeah, it's been a really enjoyable summer gig wise, you know.
Mate, I'm pleased. Yeah. I'm really pleased for you. That sounds like you've had a great run of it. And I'm so pleased that the Helix is proving itself to be the tool you wanted it to be.
Yes, although I did buy an amp recently. I told you now I bought a Peavey Bandit for 20 quid.
This was a nostalgia trip, right? Though you had one in your youth, is that right?
Years ago when I was about 18. And I loved it. Not the exact same model as this one. The one I had was the red stripe one. This is the silver stripe one. But it sounds awesome. It's so loud. I love the clean channel on it. And now I'm thinking kind of like, you know, because I'm trying to, I also want to put a little pub band together, maybe a three piece, just locally. And I'm like, if I do that, then I'll probably use the Catalyst and the Bandit as like a stereo amp setup behind me, with the Helix feeling it as like a pedal board instead of like a full amp. You know, so I'm kind of like, I can find a use for it. It's not a complete waste of 20 quid. But,
mate, it's 20 quid. You bought an entirely giggable amp for 20 quid.
Yeah, for like the cost of a takeaway. It's ridiculous, really, isn't it? And, you know, it was a guy like three streets away who was selling it. So didn't even have
to. What a pleasure. So you just literally walked up the road and picked it up for 20 quid. Mate, you can't argue with that. That is absolutely, that's fantastic. Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, though. Speaking of, I wanted to talk to you about something that I was reading this week. I sent you a link, actually. Because we're just talking now about kind of, you know, doing deck gigs and things like that and learning all these different songs and different styles. And I kind of, I stumbled across this Music Radar thing, this interview with Nuno Bettencourt.
Yes.
Who is just one of the best guitarists ever to exist, you know, just...
Apparently so. Apparently so, yeah. I mean, he is. He is. He is.
Well, he seems to know it. I mean,
this has angered you, hasn't it?
Well, no, it hasn't angered me. I'll be honest. I kind of see his point, but I don't think what he's saying is also necessarily true. You know. Mm-hmm. So basically.
So what's he said?
So the headline is actually the headline of this article is is actually not a headline. It's just an expert excerpt of what he said. You know, a little cutout. Yeah. And what he said is, I'm sorry, most of the guitar players who I admire could not in their lifetime play that gig. And then he says, Nuno Bettencourt explains why the Rihanna gig is way tougher than rock. And he says, the extreme guitarist says even Slash would struggle in a set that requires different styles, song after song. Mm-hmm. And then there's this part further on where he says, most guitar players who I admire could not in their lifetime play that gig. I mean that in the most complimentary way possible. Slash is one of the greatest rock guitar players of all time, but I guarantee, and he'd be the first to tell you, that if he jumps up and he's got to play a clean intro to Rude Boy from Rihanna, it ain't happening. I'm just like, haven't you heard the clean intro to... You know, like Paradise City. I mean, I just think he's completely utterly wrong, because I've gigged with guitarists who are clearly very influenced by rock people like Slash, and you know, and they can still play all the different styles because they've sat at home and practiced it. And every wedding gig guitarist that there is out there is that kind of guitarist who has to learn different styles for different songs. I just don't think he's right. I just think he's. He's giving enough justice to players out there like Slash, who absolutely, I think, could, you know, do something if they bring something of their own to that gig.
They could
satisfy the requirements of the gig. So I just disagree, you know.
It's definitely out of your wheelhouse, as they would say, for like how to represent yourself as a guitar player in the public forum, right? I know, because you are a humble man, and particularly about your talents on the guitar. So you would never say that about another guitarist, right? So I can see why that grates with you, and it does me as well. I'm far less humble than you are, but I kind of get what he's saying. But I just think it's a bit of a dick move to say it like that.
It totally is. Right? It is, isn't it?
Well, so here's the thing, and you got right. First of all, right, this has made a lot of the guitar news this last couple of weeks. Whether it's a slow couple of weeks for guitar news or not, I'm not sure. But a lot of the editorials have jumped onto this, right?
Yeah.
And arguably, you put Slash in the headline of any guitar news, and it will pick up, you know, viewership, right?
Yeah.
So there is that bit of kind of the media pushing this a little bit more, but in quotes are exactly the words verbatim as you read them to us. So I kind of read it, and the reason it didn't sit well with me is like Nuno is getting a lot of PR, positive PR at the moment off the back of the kind of reunion of Extreme, some of his solos on the latest album. I mean, you've got people like Rick Beato, you've got people like Steve Lukather talking about it, Brian May from Queen. You've got all of these, you know, highly revered guitarists talking about, honestly, Nuno is the man, right? Technically, from a technical perspective and from a playing perspective, a groove perspective, his ability to transcend multiple genres from funk to rock to blues to whatever. He's like the guy right now. So he's actually like... It's probably why he's being interviewed at the moment, right, by all the guitar magazines. So good for Nuno, right? But I don't know. Has he got like a chip on his shoulder about the fact that for the last whatever 10 years it is, he's been standing next to Rihanna on stage, and that's how he's been predominantly making his living, being a pro musician, right?
Yeah.
And I can imagine... There's probably, when I say chip on his shoulder, it's like he was a renowned, is a renowned artist in his own right. But for all intents and purposes, the crowd that rock up to go and watch Rihanna are not going to go and watch Rihanna because she's got Nuno on guitar.
No, exactly.
I would dare Rihanna say. Fans. They're Rihanna fans, right? So there's this thing, right, where, I don't know, maybe I've got it wrong. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I'm kind of like, dude, you're defending a little bit too much your kind of reasons for being Rihanna's guitarist. Mm. And yeah, totally, you've got to be flexible and a proper session muso to be able to sit in with that band. And of course, there's no one finer than Nuno to do that. So you kind of go, all right, well, he's defending it a little bit more aggressively than is necessary, perhaps, as to the complexities of that gig. We all get it. We all get how complex that is. But then you go, well, how does he then further justify it? It's by taking almost like a passive-aggressive, indirect shot at another guitarist, right? Mm. Who he says, oh, no, don't get me wrong. This is one of my idols and he's one of the greatest rock guitar players of all time.
Yeah.
But he's effectively saying, but I'm better than him because I can do this and he couldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
which I just think is like a bit of a dick move. And you don't know he couldn't because I'm sure the first rehearsal you went into with Rihanna's band, you kind of, you know, worked your way through the pieces, figured it out and realised what you were going to do, which any guitarist of that level could do. So... yeah, it's quite, I think, I don't know, it's a little bit of foot-in-mouth kind of moment, I think.
I think, he makes it sound like that every night when you're playing for Rihanna, it's like some kind of unknown lion's den where you don't know what's coming at you, what song to play, and you've got to, he makes it sound like it's some kind of, you know, reactive kind of onslaught of music that a guitarist as good as I could respond to so well. It's like, no, I'm sure every element of it is rehearsed, every bar
for sure
is known, every transition between songs is pre-programmed on Ableton Live, and there's not a single thing, there's even a click track in your ears, there's nothing about that gig that isn't rehearsed. So it's wrong to suggest that any other guitarist in your position wouldn't have had the opportunity to have practiced and rehearsed guitar parts to, come up with parts, whether it's new things for the live show, whether it's recreating things on a record. You know, I just think it's wrong to suggest that somebody else who is as revered of a rock guitarist as he is, and Slash is as revered as anyone else in, rock guitar, of course he could have done something. The only difference is that Slash would have been more famous than you, Nuno, whilst he was doing it, because you didn't provide solos for Michael Jackson, did you? Although if you did, I'm going to eat those words. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't think you did. I think you're correct in that. And that's the thing, right? I mean, Slash is one of the hardest working musicians, decade over decade over decade, right?
Yeah.
And with all the rock and roll excess and all of the top hat silliness and all of the, shenanigans, fundamentally, there is a really talented blues rock guitarist that has also done some great session work with loads of people, from Carole King to Michael Jackson to hip-hop artists like Backstreet.
Yes.
And of course, you're getting his signature tone in each of those kind of incarnations. But I mean, I am a huge Slash fan, right? And I was about to say unfortunately, but that's me pretending, really. Pleasingly, my eldest son has just like gone like headlong into all of my music taste, right? And at the moment, my eldest, who is a guitar player and who's doing really well and devouring the guitar, is fully on a Slash, like Guns N' Roses thing, right? Literally every track he wants to learn, he's like, teach me this, show me this. And he just watches the music videos over and over again and the live concerts. And I haven't sat down and listened to a Slash album in quite a while, right? Because there's other stuff I listen to now. But I'm reacquainting myself with that back catalogue and records that he's done since I kind of stopped buying the records every year. And my son's going, no, you need to listen to this. It's like this track off this album, but it's different and it's got spin and the riff's different here, but it's kind of got the same vibe. So I know you'll like this. And I'm losing my mind to all of this, mate. It's great. But that's I'm watching so awesome. Some of this. I know, dude. Honestly, I have to pinch myself sometime, right? And I'm sitting here in my office and I can hear him upstairs blazing on his guitar the riffs that I was learning when I was 15 years old, and he's only 9. So there's a whole nostalgia thing going on in my house at the moment with this. But yeah. Sitting with him, because he wants to sit and watch some of the live concerts for me. So I've got him a few of the concerts on Blu-ray and stuff. The gigs that I haven't seen of some of Slash's solo project and his latest band with the Conspirators. There's one gig that I was watching with him this week. And my God, I mean, the guy's pushing like 57 years old now, I think. I think I'm right in saying that. He's like mid to late 50s now. My God, his playing is ferocious in a really articulate way. And when you watch his progression over the years, from when he was like 20 years old up to now, and how he's continued to push and play, and it, you know, his technique, it hasn't stayed the same. It's evolved beautifully. And I I'm watching some of this stuff now, going, dude, I totally get it. This guy is a guitar god, right? And he's continuing to push his playing. And there's a lot of great stuff. There's a Blu-ray that I'll recommend to our listeners, if you are fans of Slash, that I've only just watched. I think it was recorded a good few years ago, but it is with Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators, so kind of Slash's latest band. But I think it's called Live at the Roxy. And watch that either with a decent set of headphones or a good surround system, and watch that and the camera work and the recording of that concert. You know, if you need to be shown that Slash is a great guitarist, it just watch that. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
So why am I making that point? Is because now, even still, his playing moves me and I get that emotive feeling. Yeah. And it's subjective, right? It's what the listener enjoys, right? And to me, I'm reminded, and I can still enjoy his playing because it still moves me, even though he's not the most technically like Satriani Vi guitarist, that necessarily the cleanest in his technique all the time. And you know what you get with him. It's visceral, and it's contagious, because I can see it in how the generation coming through and my son are absorbing it. I went and watched on YouTube a couple of these gigs that Nuno's done with Rihanna. Now, don't get me wrong, Nuno is a phenomenal, phenomenal player. His playing doesn't really move me in the same way. And that's personal to me, right? There's lots of people that love Nuno as a guitarist, and I get it. But it's for me, it's not the same thing. So, you know, I'm not dissing Nuno. I'm just saying, you know, on balance, you know, horses for courses, Nuno.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I think we should put that one to bed, because I don't want to kind of be a Nuno basher, because I think he's an amazing guitarist. But I agree, actually, it doesn't his playing doesn't really move me like you say. There's something about what Slash does that does move me as well. Yeah, I think he's an incredible guitarist, great improviser, and you know, is one of the defining guitarists of a whole genre of music, but. But anyway, that was the first thing I wanted to talk about. I just kind of thought, you know, it's just a dick move, like you said. But but anyway, let's get on to our main topic for this week. Sorry to interrupt this conversation. However, if you're a regular listener, then you should definitely come and join us on our Facebook group, the Guitar Geek Hangout. Go and join the Guitar Geek Hangout on Facebook now before you carry on with the podcast. I'll wait here. Hey, welcome back. Back in the end of June, I put a question up on the Guitar Geek Hangout page asking people what they'd like us to talk about. You know, give the people what they want kind of thing. And there were so many amazing suggestions. And we thought we'd start this week, actually, with pretty much the first suggestion that was on there. And that was from King Fredward Simpson. Great name. and he came up with, actually, it's just a superb list of things to do. Everyone's suggestion was fantastic, but pretty much every suggestion that he gave, I think we should do. And the first one he said is, if you had £3,000, what guitar would you buy? So £3,000, $3,000, whatever, what would you buy? And do you know what? We spoke about this last night, and we decided that we'd just add a little spice to this and say...
We did.
Didn't we? Yeah. So what are we going to do with that £3,000? Well, We've each got to come up with an off-the-shelf guitar that we would buy, and also potentially like a custom guitar build from either custom builder or more boutique builder kind of thing. And actually, I found this quite easy. I don't know about you. Well, do you know why?
Please.
Right, because I was thinking in my mind, £3,000 doesn't buy you like a standard, you know, American PRS, really.
But
it does pretty much give you access to some of the best Strats in the world. Mm-hmm. So I kind of thought, okay, forget £3,000. £3,000 doesn't actually go that far when it comes to really nice guitars. But what it does allow you, it opens up a world of Strats. So when you think about, you know, how much a Strat should really cost because of that, you know, easy assembly, the fact that it's such a simple design, just slabs of wood, you know, and basic hardware. Then £3,000, you know, what does £3,000 get you when it comes to Strat? So I kind of went down the Strat route with this. Kind of forget something more unique or complex. What does £3,000 get me when it comes to a really good, you know, proper pro Strat? And, you know, pretty much the world's your oyster. So here's my first guitar. So what I would get if I had £3,000, and actually I've got to ask for some forgiveness, Kieran, because...
Have you gone over?
I've gone over, but only by £99.
Oh, that's fine. Oh, I wonder if it's the same thing that I found, because, yeah, there's one that I've got that's 99 quid over, to be fair.
Right.
You could bargain them down. You could bargain them down in the guitar shop and say, come on, dude, get me this for three straight.
Exactly. So here we go.
Oh, hello. That is tasty.
So this is terrible radio, obviously, because you're saying, oh, look at that. And we've not said anything yet. But what I've gone for is a John Sir Classic S.
Yeah.
In Sonic Blue, like we've said before, the guitar, the guitar that gets you everywhere, that plays every, is a humbucker, single coil. You can do everything for that. And I could buy that now for £3,099 from a retailer here in the UK called Guitar, but other retailers are available, obviously. And the reason I've gone for that is because, well, one, I've always wanted to try a John Sir guitar, because I hear a lot of people talking about how ridiculous good they are. A good friend, Mr. Rory Harvey, who we've had on the show, and he's a tremendous guitarist, one of the busiest guitarists I know, and... You know, a big Helix fan as well, just putting that in there. But his main guitars now are, he's got two Sirs, I believe, a Sir Classic T and a Sir Classic S. And he pontificated, you know, in a WhatsApp conversation to me just about how, you know, unbelievably great they were as guitars. And I think it's down to, you know, it's kind of the law of diminishing returns in terms of, you know, is it the law of diminishing returns? I don't know. Anyway, it's basically everything that John Sir does is all about the finer details that make the slightest improvements and all those things.
Marginal gains.
Marginal gains, that's it.
Yeah.
Diminishing returns, that's the exact opposite. Marginal gains, exactly that. It's all about those kind of little details, you know, that he puts into things, you know, like whether it's the neck shape, you know, the heel of the neck pocket, the choice of hardware, things like the tremolo arm angle and length that are slightly different. So many different things that go into how well those guitars play. And I just think, you know, if you're going to go out there and buy yourself £3,000 worth of a Strat, that, you know, maybe that's the best you can do. Especially when you consider how much his other guitars cost to be able to get a Sir guitar in the UK for less than the price of a custom shop Strat. For that amount of money, that's probably what I would go for, Kieran. So there you go. That's my off the shelf £3,000 guitar.
Dude, I think it's a brilliant choice, right? Sir guitars are by all accounts, because again, I haven't played one, but I've got friends that have got them, and some serious guitar geeks that I'm thinking of that have got money that bought these guitars, and they honestly wax lyrical about them, and I believe it. They're not just saying that because they spent an awful lot of money on them. They've described it exactly as you said, which is, it is a Strat, But it's just, you know, in your hands, the best feeling, best sounding, just most responsive Strat S-style guitar that you've ever had. And actually, considering how it plays, it represents really good value for money. It mm-hmm. doesn't feel like I'm being ripped off. £3,000 is a fair chunk of change, right, for anything. But by all accounts, it's well spent when you when you put it on one of these guitars. And it's no wonder Rory plays them. He's a pro muso, and I know other pro muso like Matteo Sassata. He's another huge advocate of Sir guitars as well. So yeah, great choice, dude. I'm not sure about the color for me, but you know,
I kind of like Sonic Blue.
Yeah,
I do kind of like
you
it.
You do like that. Yeah. It's good. It's a great choice.
Just a little bit. I got to say, I actually listened to a podcast the other day when we were talking about various things. And at the end, you were asking me, hey, what do you think of the new colours for the PRS SE? I thought I sound so negative about them. I shouldn't be so negative. There's nothing wrong with those colours. If you like them, like them. I think I'm unjustifyingly negative about those guitars sometimes. I need to have a word with myself. But anyway.
Yeah, fair enough. I like the reflection you've had there. I like that.
Yeah,
Little post editing comment. You should put that in the description. Since then, Matthew's had a cup of tea and a good night's sleep and changed his mind. You know, tune in next week to see. Will Matthew be grumpy about these colours or generally happy? I just to see, like, the sunshine. It's July, almost into summer,
exactly.
And now all of a sudden Matthew Oliver likes the new PRS Silver Sky colours. You know,
that's it. Oh, dear.
I'm teasing you unfairly. No, it's cool, man.
Do you want me to go?
Okay, right. So look, I found this a bit more tricky, and I'll briefly say why. In my head, I thought, because I've been buying less expensive guitars recently and being really pleasantly surprised with them, all the way from really super budget cheap to kind of mid-range. And then, you know, I've waxed about it lyrically enough on this podcast, like some of the stuff from Tokai. In my head, I thought 3,000, well, that's just going to open up a huge spectrum of guitars. Where am I even going to start? That's a lot of money. Mm. And then as I started looking, actually, it's a very clever pricing point to make a choice around.
Yeah.
Because what I found through my looking is it's definitely more money than you need to get a off-the-shelf standard production line run from the likes of Fender or Gibson or something like that. You don't need that much money. So you know you've got, you know, a Gibson, standard Gibson Les Paul, standard American Strat, you know, probably half that price, maybe two-thirds that price, right?
Yeah.
So you're actually saying, well, we've got a little bit more money than that. Where can we go? But my observation then was the same as yours, is actually it's not quite enough money to get into the super premium stuff, right?
Yeah.
So things like custom shop build guitars from the likes of Fender or you know, anyone else that's doing kind of custom shop stuff, Gibson as well. It's not really enough to get you into the entry-level brand new stuff for PRS, actually.
Yeah.
For the American kind of made stuff.
Yeah.
It's an interesting price point there. The Music Man stuff as well. I thought, oh, maybe you could get a Luke for that, because having played Damo's Luke, which is just stunning.
Yeah.
And again, another fine example of where you kind of feel, okay, this is an expensive guitar, but it's definitely worth it. I can see why it's this much money.
Yeah.
It's not enough money to get one of those.
No, it isn't.
So I was like, actually, this is a really interesting price point. So what I did find a whole bunch of in this range, like, well, you've got a few options here. You can either save a third of that money, and then you've got a whole plethora of guitars that you can go and look at. But if you really want to spend the full amount of £3,000, actually, what I kept finding that appealed to me as off-the-shelf stuff was a lot of signature guitars, which is, I think, it's that price range where you're paying a little bit more money above and beyond the kind of standard, you know, production line of some of these guitar manufacturers like Ibanez, Gibson, Fender, PRS, some of their stuff. But you're paying a little bit more for somebody else's signature on the headstock and maybe a few little appointments on the guitar that the standard wouldn't have. So things that sit into that price bracket then, obviously, the now, you know, world famous PRS Silver Sky, still retailing for around $2,800 bucks, pounds.
Yeah.
Great guitar, arguably, you know, a rival to the Sir Strat that you just described.
Yeah, really direct rival, actually.
Direct rival, right? So so the PRS Silver Sky, I'd be quite tempted with that if I had $3,000 to spare.
Yeah.
The guitar that I've kind of coveted but then decided against and ended up saving a bucket load of cash and modding my own, but all of the Slash Gibson signature Les Paul run that are out at the moment, they are all just underneath that kind of...
Yeah.
$2,800, $2,900 bucks range. So I'd be quite tempted with one of those. A nice, you know, set neck, good Gibson guitar, Slash's name on it. We've just spoken a lot about Slash. Those guitars hold their value. That if you're not into any of those, and this is the thing with signature guitars, is it's kind of a bit polarizing, really, if you don't like the artist. But, you know, the Nita Strauss Ghost, I've noticed that's out. That's a really cool looking guitar, and that's kind of in that price range as well. So there's a lot of signature stuff out there that you could look at. My choice for the money was actually, and let me see if I can find it, in terms of off the shelf standard kind of stuff, I could have bought any one of those, but actually what I went for was a Gibson ES 339, and I'm going to send you this now if I can, so you can have a look at it. And because we just had a conversation about polarizing colors, yes or no? I want to see your reaction to this.
Okay,
because I know you like a Gibson.
Holy
semi, semi. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a yeah. That's a polite yeah of yeah. No, thanks. Not for me.
Oh my goodness!
No, yeah, I do not like that.
That is a cool color, yeah. Because I think they do it. I think Epiphone did a similar color recently on an inspired by Gibson. Yeah, it's cool. It's almost like, was it a Blueberry Burst? Yeah, because I think they
it
did
is
like
Blueberry Burst.
I think was it Gary Clark Jr. had a
correct.
Is that right?
Good knowledge. That
style?
Yes, he did.
It is a very cool color. I just didn't expect you to go for that, but it is very, very cool. That is actually a bargain.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I think, you know, true to my tight-fisted nature, it's actually on sale at the moment as well, right? It's got £400 off.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a proper bona fide Gibson, really nice figured maple top. 339, nice size, so nice giggable size, whilst being a bit chunkier than your normal Les Paul. And that colour, I just think it's a wicked colour.
I agree.
And I think if you spent £3,000 on a guitar, you would feel like you'd spent £3,000 every time you opened up the case and saw that or looked at that hanging on the wall, because it's a little bit special. I think. Again, all of this is completely subjective.
It is subjective, but that is a very cool guitar to grab for £99 less than the Strat I chose. You know, that is a fantastic choice, mate. Very, very excellent choice. I should put some links to these guitars actually in the description so that our listeners can go and have a look at the choices we've made as well. But yeah, that is cool. Do you know what I like about that is that they haven't gone for the kind of basic dot inlays. They've gone for block inlays on the fretboard. Yeah. I think that sets the neck off beautifully. I've always loved block inlays on 335 and 339 style guitars. I just think they look great.
Me too.
But dot inlays obviously are kind of like the original kind of thing. But that's awesome.
Yeah, but I prefer the blocks as well. I've got blocks on my 335 and I've picked it for that.
Yeah.
Here you go. There's another one for you to look at if the Blueberry Burst offended you in any way.
I'm just surprised. Oh wow, that is nice. That's so cherry, 60s cherry. That is
You can have the same guitar, including hard case, in a lovely, more traditional, figured, almost quilted looking cherry top. Yeah,
beautiful.
Which is pretty lovely.
Yeah.
Pretty lovely.
Gorgeous guitar.
Yeah.
Absolutely gorgeous.
And yeah, I mean, it's still a fair chunk of change, but you know, I think that represents a good investment as well.
Yeah, I think, do you know what? Credit to Mr. King Fredward Simpson, who suggested this price range for us to look at guitars. Mm. It's a very unique price range, because
it is.
You could go a grand either way and have more choices. Do you know what I mean?
Correct.
You could go up to $4,000 and be like, okay, there's a whole new world of guitars. And you could go down to $2,000 and have a whole new world of guitars. But for some reason, £3,000 seems to be this dip in choices.
Exactly.
Isn't that
this
weird?
Is why I found it difficult. Yeah. And I don't know whether that was done inadvertently or not, but it actually presented for me quite a conundrum because I thought there's going to be so much to choose.
Yeah.
And of course, there are a lot of guitars out there for this price range, but none that I thought were the right guitar for that money. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd either spend a little bit less and get something else, or you'd spend a bit more. And so, yeah, very clever price point.
Fantastic choice, dude.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so that's our off-the-shelf things. Like, if we had to walk into a guitar shop, had $3,000 burning a hole in our pocket that day, we'd try out, you know, one of the Sirs, we'd try out a 335, we'd maybe try out some of these artists' signature guitars. If we wanted to leave with a guitar that day and go, right, there we go, we've blown $3,000 and that's a nice guitar. But what if we wanted to go a bit on guitar safari and maybe go and try something completely wild card with that same money?
Yeah, well, I went for a Strat again. But the reason being is because one of the builders that I really admire out of the UK, and we spoke about him before, and when we spoke about you know lesser known luthiers, the podcast we did probably a year and a half ago, this guy popped up. I think his name's Mike Balls, but it's MB Guitars, based out of the UK, and he custom makes Strats, and he's not buying in parts. He's not buying in necks and bodies and stuff. He's building everything from scratch himself, you know, doing his own, you know, cutting the wood and hand sanding the shape of the guitars. And if you go on Instagram and just follow MB Guitars and look at some of his videos and things, you'll just see just how traditionally he builds his guitars and the process he goes through. I think his waiting list is a year and a half at the moment.
Wow.
Something like that. Incredible backlog. People like Tomo Fujita have played his guitars.
Oh, cool.
You know, he's a really up and coming, you know, SVL, you know, Simon Law style kind of business.
Yeah.
And I just love how some of his guitars look. He just has this amazing way of being able to build vintage spec Strats and Telecasters that look like you know, the real thing. Just stunning instruments. But the reason I've chosen them also is because his pricing, I think, for that kind of guitar, when you look at the marketplace around, is really competitive. I mean, a Strat style guitar, the basic spec from him starts at £2,900, which is crazy when you think about it. You know, for someone who builds small batches of guitar, he builds like two or three guitars at a time. And you know, does everything from scratch. You know, he's carving the neck, everything.
Wow.
You know, and one of the other things he does, which not many people does, is he offers the choice of slab or veneer fingerboards. Not many custom builders do that now. Most people just do it as a slab, you know, straight onto a flat neck piece. But he gives you the choice if you want a veneer board. And for our listeners, the difference is that obviously your fretboard has a radius. It's rounded over. Some are flatter than others. But most guitar builders will put a piece of wood as the fretboard that's flat onto the neck piece, and then that is radiused, and that's called a slab fingerboard. But what they used to do in the 60s is this, to try and save money. I think this was an early CBS thing, is instead of radiusing the fingerboard, the more expensive piece of hardwood, that ebony or rosewood, they would radius the maple neck itself and then put a veneer of rosewood or ebony over that was curved to mean that, so that was less wood being used. And he gives you the choice of that. He'll do both, you know, which is something not many people do. But clearly a Strat from him is going to cost more than £3,000. But I chose him because I love what the look of what he does. And these prices start below the budget that we've set. His prices start at about £2,900. So check them out, Mike Bowles Guitars, MB Guitars in the UK. mbguitars.co.uk.
I think you've done really well with that, and you've really nicely commented on a number of things around the price point there and the customization bit, right? So actually, when I went again to look at the boutique range, again, I found this a tricky price point. Yeah. So really clever as to choose this price point, because you can, if you're shrewd enough, get something a little bit more boutique. But actually, for a lot of custom luthiers, the prices are a bit higher than that. And one of my observations as well doing this, if there are any custom luthiers listening, like make your pricing a bit more visible on your websites, please, because it's a little bit off-putting to potential customers like me when I go, actually, I want to learn more about your guitars. I love the look of them. I like the story. I like the type of thing you're doing. But quite a few of these custom luthier websites, they just say, please contact me for pricing and stuff. Which I think is kind of like almost a missed opportunity there. Just give an indication of roughly the price range so that people can know whether they're fishing in the right pond or not. So I discounted quite a lot of luthiers because it just wasn't obvious to me what their pricing structure was. But I agree with you that MB there represents really phenomenal value for money. Obviously, you'll have to wait a little bit of time to get this guitar built. Mm. But again, for a luthier like that, I don't think there's anything wrong with then rocking up and going, look, I can see your guitar start from roughly around this. I've got £3,000 to spend. Can we have a chat as to what we could do for £3,000 and the level of customization and things that I would be able to get for that? And I dare say all of these luthiers would say, yeah, great, absolutely, let's have a chat. This is what I can do in that price range. This is what you can customize. And then all of a sudden you are building a guitar with a luthier. Mm. In a budget that is acceptable to them, because that's the price range they're happy to kind of retail their work at. So
that's a really good way to approach it as well, because then you really do get the most for your money then, don't you?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you do. And you also, and the luthier also knows at that point you're not time wasting. You've got this chunk of change to spend. That's your budget. And you can almost kind of work at pace with them to say, well, look, what can we build together, rather than specking something up and then you negotiate on the cost and there's all that backwards and forwards. Just be honest and say, how much can we do for £3,000? What can we make together? So I think that's a great choice. For me, dude, there's a couple of choices that I've gone for. One is probably not a surprising choice for, again, listeners of the podcast, who've heard us talk about kind of more boutique luthiers before. I've popped this one over to you, Matt, to have a look at. But James Collins, hand-built guitars, who we met at the guitar show that we went to earlier in the year. I did some of my training with him when I went and built a guitar with him.
Yeah.
And I've always loved the Les Paul-style guitars that he's doing. Sorry for calling them that, James, but they are their own thing in their own right. But clearly they're inspired by that kind of single cut and double cut kind of Les Paul-type configuration. But they are just beautiful pieces of work. And they do retail for a lot more money normally, $4,000 to $5,000, $6,000 for one of his works of art, I would say, because they just are truly beautiful. However, this one is for Ollie Browning. If you're listening, Ollie, you need to go onto James Collins' website and check out the GTA Quilt Maple, because it is very much what I think you like in a guitar. It's that single pickup, double cut configuration, but just in this most beautiful piece of
looking at it now, work. It's absolutely stunning,
isn't it?
Oh. I mean, Ollie would swap that out for a P90, I'm sure, but
still. He probably would. But I mean, look, that's on sale at the moment. So that was originally $2,500. So again, I've not spent the budget here, but if I had £3,000, I couldn't get anything else from James at that price range. Although you could probably, don't hold me to this, he's a thoroughly lovely chap, you could probably go to him and say, what could we do for £3,000? And you could probably even get something more appointed or different to this one. But in his shop, available at the moment on sale for £2,250, is this stunning boutique guitar, which, if I'm honest, between that and the off-the-shelf 335 that I looked at earlier, I'd probably take my money there and get one of those
Me too.
Get one. I'd get one of these James Collins. Yeah,
I was astounded by his guitars when we saw him last year at the thing. It was clearly just full of love and admiration for building guitars. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like you could feel that in just in holding his guitars and looking at them closely. You could feel, you know, the passion that he puts into building them. In your hands. Totally. It was incredible.
As I said, he taught me how to build Strats, and I spent a good amount of time with him. He's a proper guitar nerd like us, and it's passion and the details and the OCD level that he goes into all the things that appeal to me, and that comes through in his guitar designs.
We've got to get
the quality of the finishing. Yeah, we will. We need to go down and see him down in East Sussex, I think. He's still based, but yeah, beautiful guitars. So you could pick up one of his for that money. And then lastly, mate, a wild card. I know I was only supposed to pick one, but I came across these and I thought, oh, these are quite quite tasty. So if you're not wanting to wait a year or so for a custom build boutique, and you want something a little bit different than off the shelf, but still with that handmade luthier feel to it. I came across these. Have a look at what I've just sent you. A guitar brand that I'd not heard of up until now. Maybe you have.
Mayons.
Well, this is the thing. I've heard it pronounced in a variety of different ways since stumbling across them. So I've heard everything from Mayons to Mayons to mayonnaise.
I don't think it should be mayonnaise. These are interesting.
Very modern. So very different. If you're looking for something which is a much more modern style guitar, I think these are generally assimilated to like kind of more progressive rock music. But I mean, it's a guitar. You can play what you want on it.
Steve Ray Vaughan would never have bought one of these, would he? No, but
it's still probably
an incredible looking instrument.
It's a beautiful looking instrument, right? Yeah. And all of these are handmade. Pieces that they're not mass produced, so they do fall into the boutique category. They're handmade in Poland.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. So worth having a look at some of this stuff. Again, they retail for quite a sum of money. Some of these guitars, but some of the entry level ones are going for £3,000. £2,900 is this one that I've shown you here. This is the Mayonnaise Duvel Elite. Right. And they do a six string and a seven string version in a variety of different finishes. Everything on these guitars is beautiful. Yeah. The ergonomics of it, the finishing on it, the wood choices are all, you know, right out of kind of PRS territory beauty. Stainless steel fretwork, proper, you know, exotic woods, and all bare knuckle electronics. So they bare knuckle do their own pickups for Mayonnaise. So everything in the guitar and on the guitar is quality, and they're also handmade, which I think for what that comprises of and the look of it, the price point actually isn't too bad at £3,000. That's a lot of guitar for £3,000.
Well, funnily enough, you know, I think that's an excellent option. And actually, I didn't think about guitars like that as well. They kind of look like weapons almost. They're such cool looking. But I also did a couple of wild cards.
Oh, cool.
I've got to wrap this up. But I wanted to ask the question, could I also potentially get a vintage guitar for £3,000?
Ooh.
So the answer is yes, right. Let me show you this. This is I'll put a link in the chat here, and again I'll put a link in the thing. This is actually already sold, but this is quite astonishing, really, because this is a Gretsch 6118 double anniversary from 1964. It's not been refinished. It's had a refret recently, and I think the neck was reset according to the specs. And this is on atbguitars.com, which is a fantastic vintage seller. But this guitar sold, because it says out of stock, but this guitar sold for £2,250. That's a 1964 Gretsch 6118 double anniversary. So not one of the particularly hugely, you know, It's not like the country gent or anything, you know. It's not the super, you know, what's the word? You know, the not the famous models of Gretsch. Yeah. But it's still, it's got that Gretsch look. You know, it's a single cutaway, large body, large box, you know, Gretsch guitar. But that's a 1964 bona fide vintage instrument with
it's
the original
in lovely
hard
condition.
Shell case, you know.
Yeah.
It's in great condition. He says this is in great representation of the Gretsch sound of the mid-60s, the high-low pickups providing a subtle yet twangy timbre. great Gretsch tone with the looks to match. And it's a two-tone guitar, so it's got, you know, obviously different colours on the back, but $2,500. And then check this one out.
And refretted as well, nicely refretted. So
very
great.
Nicely refretted. And then here's another one. So again, you can get a vintage guitar for very reasonable money. And this one's on vintageandrareguitars.com. This is a 1973, so not super, it's not like golden era vintage, but it's still vintage, you know. It's still this is a 50-year-old instrument, Fender Mustang competition red.
That's cool.
Vintage and rare guitars, you know, just under £5 under the budget, $3,000. That guitar will not get any cheaper, you know.
No.
You could put your $3,000 into that guitar, and in 10 years' time, you'd take every penny of that back out,
if not more. So, there's a huge kind of indie following for these type of offset, like Fender guitars. So, and I don't see that going away anytime soon. Yeah. So this style of guitar from Fender, I think, will get ever more popular as the years go by. And people that grew up, like now, you know, loving the offset guitars and stuff, in years to come, will pay good money for a vintage one like this. Yeah. So I think that's a good investment.
Absolutely.
If that floats your boat. Yeah, brilliant.
Cool. Well, there we go, dude. Welcome back.
Great. Oh, mate, this was so much fun. I really enjoyed today. I really enjoyed it. We ranted, we took the mickey out of each other, and more importantly, we coveted some really beautiful guitars.
As usual, we come out of the show better people.
I feel that. I'm ready for the rest of my day.
There
now.
You go. Enjoy the rest of your day, mate. Enjoy a good gig this weekend as well. Hope it goes well.
Thank you, buddy. Got to concentrate on this one. Yeah.
You'll be all right. You'll be fine.
He'll be all right. I'm gigging with my buddy, so yeah, all will be good. All will be good. That's it. All right, dude. You take care of yourself, and I will speak to you very soon, mate.
Speak to you soon. All the best, buddy. Take care, mate.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening. If you like what you hear, then why not give the rest of our shows a good listen too? And if you love our podcast and you're a regular listener who wants to support the show even more, then consider buying us a coffee over on our Buy Me a Coffee page. Anyway, best wishes. See you next time on the Guitar Smarts podcast.